And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post podcast live from Pier 17 at South Street Seaport, where I am thrilled to be joined for what is essentially an annual thing now by, let me see if I can, by New Orleans Pelicans / Blue Devils shooting guard J.J. Redick, one of, I think, 18 former Duke alumni and players on the Pelicans franchise. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on. I always enjoy doing this with you. This is, I think, the third or fourth time I've come on your podcast. I know I've had you twice on my podcast. So
I
always enjoy these conversations, man. No, I always enjoy these conversations. These are always fun.
And the Ringer podcast network as well.
Yes. Yes. J.J. Redick podcast on the Ringer. I owe a few episodes to the people that do listen to the podcast. I'm a little behind, but I've got some stuff coming up.
Have you been in New Orleans at all this summer?
Yeah, I've been twice. I'm going down again tomorrow. There's a sort of a team building day / event that we're doing that I think Trajan has sort of organized.
Of Duke. Trajan Langdon of Duke.
Trajan Langdon of Duke, correct. This is going to include the whole team. It's not going to just be me and the other four Duke players on the team. Okay. It's going to include all the guys on the team. But, yeah, we're doing a little thing. Edwin Moses and Tommy Smith, two very famous U.S. track and field superstars, are going to talk to the team. Tommy Smith actually was in the 1968 Olympic Games. He and John Carlos were famous for getting up on the podium after winning the gold and the bronze medal and giving the Black Power salute. I actually wrote two papers on Tommy Smith and John Carlos when I was at Duke. These were like not thesis papers, but they were 30-page papers that I wrote.
That's somewhere between a paper and a thesis.
Yeah,
they
were longer papers. So I'm particularly excited about tomorrow and getting the chance to not only meet Tommy but Edwin as well.
These mini camps now, like if your team doesn't have them, it almost seems like the Cavs were here. And it's funny because the alpha dog gets, in some cases, preferential, like geographical choice. So all the Cavs were here in New York last week because Kevin Love's their best player, and they had a little mini camp. And now it's a thing. Like if you don't like, oh, the sources say LeBron is organizing a mini camp for the Lakers. Whoop-de-doo. Like now the Lakers chemistry is going to be amazing and the fans go crazy. But you got to do it now.
You do have to do it. We talked about it. Drew and I did. The timing was a little weird this summer for us to get it done, but I've always thought with two things. Number one, I don't know the efficacy of these things. I'd like to know, sort of going back historically, last 8 to 10 years, like how much improvement does a team make?
It's all
in terms of wins, losses. Is there like a survey that we can do on team chemistry in terms of day to day general happiness for players that do a mini camp in the summer versus teams that don't do a mini camp? I'm wondering.
It's all results.
And then, but then secondly, also, like, some of it is, I just think, is doing it for media attention. I'm just going to be honest.
For sure. It's like when someone's like, sources say, it's because someone was like, we should tell one of these people that we're having a mini camp because people will think, hey, the Lakers are organized.
Yeah.
What a revelation. It's like the Celtics win the championship in 2008 and their preseason trip to Rome has now taken on like a mythical importance. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if they win without this, the bond. Yeah. It was like, I mean, maybe. They also had Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, and Ray Allen. They were awesome.
Yeah.
Like, they kicked everyone's so you mentioned Drew Holiday. I think it was reported during your free agency process and after that you wanting to play with him was a big factor in your decision. And I think he maybe even called you or you guys talked. And I just remember thinking, first of all, it's not like Drew Holiday is LeBron, like someone who you think, okay, everyone's trying to go play with Drew Holiday. He's kind of a low key, you know, two way, very good NBA player. Then I was like, well, they never played together. I don't know if they ever had the same age. Like, is there any, what's the connection? You just like the way he plays?
Never really crossed paths with Drew, other than on an NBA court. I've had few friends that have played with Drew, either in Philly or in New Orleans. I think you wrote a very flattering piece on Drew.
He's universally beloved.
Yeah.
And big profile.
But there's something I just enjoy the way he plays and competes and goes about his business, and his priority is, you know, his family and basketball. And that's something that I can relate to. And I think skill set wise, I think he's somebody that I just have always wanted to play with. I think, you know, defensively, he's unbelievable. He's a guy who can play with and without the ball. He's a stud to me.
It's funny because he's had a lot of leg issues that he's largely over the past 3 or 4 years have been clean. But you talked to – now, he went to a pretty well-off high school in Southern California, and you talked to the players who played with him in high school and junior high. And I'm not – I think part of it is they were not accustomed to playing with athletes of this caliber. They talk about, like, 16-year-old Jrue Holiday as if he were a combination of Shaq and Vince Carter. Like, he broke backboards.
Yeah.
He jumped – it became like Paul Bunyan. Like, I think there was one time he shot – threes lefty, and then he broke a backboard. I'm like, Jesus Christ. But he was he is now and certainly was a kind of a monster athlete.
Yeah, no, he's not just a great athlete though. He's a great player. And you know, I do think, you know, he has bounced back from those, I guess it was stress fractures, and he had surgery on his legs. But he and I talked during the free agency process on the phone. And, you know, just expressed to each other, you know, how much we wanted to play together. And, you know, I think when – if you go back to, like, the May 22nd or whenever it was that New Orleans gets the first pick, and you're on the outside and you're like, oh, that's great for them. That's exciting. I bet they're going to trade AD. I wonder what they do with Jrue. And then, you know, you start seeing – things that David's saying publicly about keeping Jrue, wanting to win, getting the right people in, getting the people that want to buy into a certain culture and a certain way of playing. And then you start getting sort of that, hey, New Orleans is going to be interested. And it all sort of happened over that like 6 week period of just like, you know, rumblings here and there. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, this could actually, you know, you're a week out and all of a sudden you're like, oh, this could actually be, you know, a real place that I could go.
Do you feel like you have a handle on the team? Because it's a deep team, and it's a strange team in terms of, like, Zion is a rookie who's going to play a lot. Start at the four. He might play some five. He might not. Who knows? But he is going to play some five. Lonzo is a point guard with, let's say, an unreliable jump shot. Ingram has had these wild ups and downs in his career and is coming off a blood clot. It's just, like, there's a lot of, like, strange pieces. How are they all going to fit together? Who's going to start? Who's going to come off the bench? What's the crunch time? Like, do you feel like you just have a handle on – is there anyone you haven't met?
No, I think actually maybe Derek, because the two times I've been down there
– Favors.
Yeah, Derek wasn't in town. Everybody else I've met. Last time – when I was there last week, you know, guys were playing full court, playing pickup. And I don't think I have like a great feel for the team because it's a lot of new pieces. You know, Jrue – really being the one sort of mainstay there, and obviously Etuan and some of the other guys that were there last year. But I look back, you just personally, I go back to like when I signed with LA or when I signed with Philly, I didn't sort of have any sense going in of what it was going to look like. I mean, I remember the day before, or like our media day, the day before training camp, my first year in LA, going to Ty, like walking over to Ty Lue and be like, hey, who's starting? Who's our starting five? I know Chris, Blake, and DJ, you know, and he is like, you mother, you know, he's just like, so that was, I didn't sign up because I envisioned a certain thing or was told a certain thing, you know, it was more like, hey, there's something exciting happening. There's a lot of interesting pieces here.
I mean, deep. It's a deep team.
Yeah, and there's just a general excitement about the direction of the franchise, and people down there are really excited.
What's your first conversation with Zion? What are your first impressions of Zion?
He's just a super nice kid. I mean, look, I think he is in a very interesting position because of the amount of responsibility that he has just off the court, right? You know, he has this huge contract with Jordan. There's going to be a lot of people pulling at him. He's got such a great head on his shoulders. And so for me, I think it's taking that sort of slow and figuring out, you know, where I can help and where I can be an added value for him.
Make shots.
Yeah, well, yeah, no doubt. For sure. On the court, of course.
I was talking to someone in the league about this today, and he said, you know, thinking about Zion and the Pelicans, like, Zion's not just a number one pick. he's one of the once every 8 years.
Yeah.
AD, LeBron, Zion. Like, he's in that, you know, you heard he is the most anticipated number one pick since LeBron or since AD. Rarely do you see those guys go to teams that you're like, there are going to be some times, is he going to be the third option, the fifth option? Like, there's a lot of talent. Like, he doesn't get to go right in and be the guy and do what he maybe wants to do or whatever. Like, that, have you thought about that? It's interesting.
It is interesting. And I think
it's probably good. I don't think it's good or bad. It's just interesting.
No, I think part of it is just a circumstance. And part of it, I think, is an intentional thing that Griff and the coaching staff and the front office has done and taking pressure off Zion. I mean, look, there's no question he, to me, is the most hyped prospect since LeBron. And you have David Griffin come out and say, it's Drew's team. Drew could win an MVP. He has that level of talent, right? And
he said Drew could win an MVP?
He did say that, yeah. And played an MVP level.
Am
I misquoting Griffin?
I don't know. He's just, he can't. It's like
he said Drew and MVP in the same sentence.
No, he can play like an MVP for five games. Yeah. But like, you know, it's like someone yesterday or last week.
I think the comparison was back in the Phoenix days talking about Nash and just how that team sort of played and based on team
success. He likes
success.
He likes the Nash Drew comparison. Yeah. So it's intentional.
That's obviously intentional to come out and say that. And then the other part of it is, you know, you're bringing in really just like you've said, you know, a really interesting mix of guys where it's, promising young players like Lonzo and Brandon. And then, you know, older vets like Derek and I, and obviously Drew is sort of the guy. It's an exciting team. The other guy that I'm kind of excited about is, not just Duke homerism, but like Frank Jackson.
He's
had
not bad.
Some great moments at the end of last season.
Like I said, you got a lot of guys. Like there are guys that are going to get squeezed. Like it's just going to happen. I don't know if it's going to be Etuan Moore, Frank. Like Kenrich Williams had a really nice stretch run. Like is he going to play? Is he going to play a little bit of four? Like you guys don't have a lot of traditional fours, or maybe any other than Zion. It's going to be very interesting how the minutes are allotted. Starting right off the bat, do you care if you start or come off the bench?
No.
Because I think the two possible starting fives. Are Lonzo, Drew, you, Zion Favors, and Lonzo, Drew, Ingram, Zion Favors, which is a lineup that really is light on shooting, but high on just run the ball down everyone's throat. So you don't care. It doesn't matter to you. You're going to play a lot of crunch time either way.
I hope that I play. I hope I play a lot. I mean, I haven't been given any indication that I won't play, but,
You're going to play a lot.
I do think, like everything, I go into every season, every situation, just kind of, with an open mind. Going back to last year, you know, Brett pulls me aside 10 minutes before our first training camp practice and says that, you know, I want to bring you off the bench. Let me know your thoughts. And I, you know, he didn't know this at the time, but I already knew that this was coming, you know, from 3 months ago in July. So, and I wasn't hurt or I was just like, all right, if that's what's good for the team, then I'll do it. I didn't think that was the right play for the team, but if he thought that, then I was fine with it. And I told him that, you know, and so this is going to be, you know, it could be interesting at times for me. I don't know, but
this was just before the first game of the season.
First training camp practice. It was September 30th.
Just to review, sometimes I just like to review what's happened in Philadelphia, just in my own mind.
Mm-hmm.
So about 1 year ago, the Sixers decided, J.J. Redick's going to come off the bench so we can start Markelle Fultz. This is what happened. That's the thing that happened. And it didn't work. People, hiring can be a slow process. Cafe Altura's COO Dylan Miskowitz needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company. It seems like a very important job. But he was having trouble finding qualified applicants. You know what? He switched to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them proactively to apply for your job so you get the best qualified candidates fast. Dylan posted the job on ZipRecruiter and said he was impressed by how quickly he had great candidates applying. He also used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature to filter his applicants so he could focus on the most relevant ones. Easy, easy, easy. And that's how Dylan found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. You almost literally can't get any faster than that. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. You can try it for free at this address, ZipRecruiter.com/lowpost. L-O-W-E, post the name of this podcast. That's ZipRecruiter.com/lowpost. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. It's time for some straight talk, people. Look, you wouldn't spend more to get the exact same thing, would you? You would not. So when I tell you that Straight Talk Wireless runs on the same networks as the big guys but charges you a lot less, you got to take that deal and run. And the deal just got even better. Straight Talk Wireless now offers 25 gigs of high-speed data on our $45 unlimited plan. That's right. Get America's best networks and 25 gigs of data for only $45 a month. Straight Talk Wireless, everything for less, only at Walmart. First 25 gigs at high speed, then 2G. See terms at straighttalk.com. First of all, you should write a book when you're done playing, because you have had you've seen some stuff and been a part of some landmark NBA moments, good, bad, whatever. You will not ever, I don't think, be a part of a moment like Kawhi Leonard's shot that ended your season and then eventually your tenure in Philadelphia. You were not on the court when that happened.
Yeah.
And I watched a bunch of different replays of it to see if I could find you this morning, and all the replays of just Toronto celebrating and Joel and Mark hugging and Joel crying and all this. Where you're on the bench? Did you just go right to? What did you do afterwards?
So I was on the bench, and I was sort of had that perfect angle, because I had sort of, as soon as the ball had come in bounds, I'd sort of walked onto the baseline, not on the court, but on the baseline, so I could sort of get a straight on view of the action. And my memory may be a little jogged, but you know, I think my hands were, my arms were crossed. I was watching the ball bounce around the rim and it went in, and I'm not sure I had any initial reaction. I think it was just shock. And you know, part of you wants to walk off the floor and punch a wall, and then the other part of you is like, all right, well, if I'm in that situation, you know, I'm on that, you know, I'm on the Raptors, you know, I'd want, you know, to dap up the people that I had just played a 7-game series against. And so I stayed on the court and I talked to Kyle and Mark and Kawhi and Danny and all those guys and told them good luck, hope they win a championship, and walked off. And then, you know, you get back to the locker room and you see the emotion. I obviously was feeling emotional, and then Joel started, you know, crying, and it, you know, those are sort of the moments that you don't forget. As much as you don't forget the shot, the aftermath of moments like that, you just don't forget, because there's just this raw emotion. And and unfortunately, you know, because I haven't won a championship, but unfortunately, the locker rooms I've been in where you feel that, and they're, you know, it's not every year, but it's fortunately for me, it's been a lot of years I've been on good teams. You know, it's just a feeling of such just brutal disappointment.
What are some of the flashbulb images that come to mind from that locker room? Like, I don't know if Brett spoke. I just don't know. But what have you, or even the plane ride back? Like, what are some of your flashbulb memories that you'll take with you?
I think, you know, I sort of had my head buried in my jersey for a while. And then, you know, you sort of go around the locker room as guys are either getting in or getting out of the shower or still in their jerseys sometimes. And, you know, you have that individual moment with each guy where you thank them and tell them how much you care about them and how great it was to be their teammate. And I've done that, you know, every year of my career. And, you know, when you go through like a real battle with someone, it makes that connection deeper. And so, you know, whether it was Jimmy or Joe or Ben or, you know, even TJ, it's like, it's almost like hard to even look them in the eye, you know, because you get emotional again. So, and then I'll remember, you know, I'll remember going back in the coach's locker room afterwards and finally, you know, just having a chance to hug Brett and those guys and Todd Wright, who now is with the Clippers, who I've become incredibly close with. He's one of my best friends in the world.
Strength coach, right?
Yeah. And now I think he's VP of athletic performance or athlete care for the Clippers now. But, you know, those sort of relationships. And I talked about this after the game, you know, and it's what I love about basketball is that it's a team sport. And you, you know, spend so much time everyone becomes a part of your essential, you know, your family. And it's not just your teammates or the coaches. It's the trainers and the support staff. It's these people that you're around every day. Alan Lumpkin, who is sort of the man for the Sixers. He's the behind the scenes guy. You know, he's in the locker room with us every day. And so he sees that disappointment. He sees that elation. He sees the ups and downs of the season. He senses the vibe of the team. He gets it, you know, and he's in there with you. And you build that relationship with him. And then to have it end that way, you know, you go down the list of all the people that you really care about. It's disappointing for everybody. And you know, there's that sort of empathy that you have for those other people. Hey, they're kind of in the same boat that I am. They're raw and disappointed and frustrated just like I am, and that makes it almost worse.
You guys had a very interesting postseason where, like, the Nets series was scary for half a second.
Yeah.
And then Joel's status for a lot of those games was uncertain until tip-off. And people forget game 4 in Brooklyn was, like, down to the wire, and that's a 2-2 series if Brooklyn pulls out that game. You made a huge three in the last minute. Mike Scott made a huge three to end up winning the game. Then you go to Toronto. Everyone picks the Raptors because the Raptors are looking great, and you guys are there's just some weirdness, and they beat you in game 1. Game 2 is a rock fight. You guys destroy in game 3. And it was like, did you feel in that Toronto series as it's coming down and you're hanging in on the road in game 7? I believe you came back to even that game up a bunch of times in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
As a team, when is the moment, or when is the time, or maybe you already believed it even in March, where you sort of feel like, all right, we're good enough to win 4 series. Like, I assume you reached that moment at some point, maybe in the Toronto series.
It was definitely in the Toronto series. And I actually, Joel and I spent some time together after the season, and we talked about it. It was game 4 for us. You know, I felt like we lost that game, and I felt like for most of that game, I felt like we had control of not just that game, but that series. And that was our chance to go up 3-1. And Joe and I both said this to each other, but like that was not that we didn't have a chance to win the series after that, but that was the opportunity that we missed, was closing out that game and going up 3-1 and really taking control of that series. Because you lose that game and it's 2-2, and you've got to win 2 out of 3 against Toronto, and that was a tough task.
Yeah, it says literally right here in my notes, game 4, Kawhi shot 91-90. I think they were up 91-90, and Kawhi makes that 3 over Joel, which I've said many times I think is as big a shot almost as the game 7 shot, which is crazy to say. But it did feel like they were wheezing toward the finish line of that game and just trying to find, like, it was an ugly game that fit your style a little better. And it just felt like you guys had physically imposed your will on that series. And if they didn't get that game.
I think Kyle said this too, right?
I don't remember.
I think Kyle might have said this in game 3 or 4, just feeling like we had imposed some level of our will, and him and Danny and those guys sort of react, like feeling that and reacting to it. And I certainly felt that. We felt that. And it sucks because, you know, we're talking about this right now, and like I'm thinking of, no, it's all good, but I'm thinking of, you know, when we're up 3-1 in 2015 against the Rockets.
For the record, I didn't bring it up.
No,
going to bring it up.
You go down the list. Like, there's, you know, I talk about this stat because I'm number one, I'm proud of it, but it's just a funny stat to me. But, you know, I've been in the playoffs
every year,
and it's weird. I haven't had a chance to win every year. You know, not every team I've been on in the playoffs has been a championship level team, but the ones that have, and I think this year's Philadelphia team was one of those teams. You go back and you think about this, and unfortunately, there's times it keeps you up at night.
It does.
You
know, the Sixers starting five of last year, you, Jimmy, Simmons, Tobias, Joel, heralded as the best starting five in the league. Certainly the Sixers thought it was, with much evidence to back that up. 40% of it turned over a month or whatever after that series. At what point did you start to wonder, is this going to be different next year? Not necessarily like, am I going to be here or not next year, but at what point does it start to creep in, like, I wonder if this is going to be the same mix if we're really going to keep this together next year.
Yeah, I mean, I think if the Sixers under Josh and Blitz, if there's been one consistent, it's been a lot of turnover in terms of player personnel. You know,
fair.
Not necessarily turnover with coaching or even the front office, really, but there's been just player personnel. And you go back the year before, we had the number one starting five in terms of net rating with Dario and Cov. Those guys get traded early in the season. We don't even start that starting five to start the year, right? They put Mark Ellen in that group. So I knew when the season ended, the fact that we didn't win, in some ways I was like, when Toronto won, I'm like, okay, well then in some ways, like, our loss is a little justified or whatever.
Validated.
You know? Validated, correct. Yeah. And so I'm like, all right, well, there's a chance we'll run this back. You know, the wild card to me was sort of Jimmy and what Jimmy wanted to do. Because for Jimmy, you know, a player of his caliber was the first time really where, he had the freedom to go choose and pick where he wanted to play. And obviously, you know, I would assume he wanted that fifth year from us. And so that was sort of the wild card. And I knew that if he had left, that there was going to be some sign and trade action, and that would directly affect sort of what they could pay me. I never got the sense that they didn't want to bring me back. It was just, you know, unfortunately it came down to a little bit of economics.
Now that you've had some time, how do you look back on the Jimmy experience? Because he lights Minnesota on fire. And I mean, literally they made a Game of Zones episode about how he lit Minnesota on fire. And chopped people's heads off in the Game of Zones episode. And he comes to Philly and just like instantaneously, it's like Jimmy mouths off at a meeting, a source to say, blah, blah, blah.
No, it wasn't instantaneous.
Okay. It was fast. And then you get into the playoffs and you get into the Toronto series in particular. And I wrote about this. The offense really became Jimmy's offense.
Yeah.
And Ben was dunker spot Ben Simmons to get out of the way. How do you assess the Jimmy Butler experience? Was it fun? Do you like him? Was it copacetic?
I love Jimmy. I would play with Jimmy again. I don't know how much longer I'm going to play basketball, but you know, if there was ever an opportunity to link up with him again, I'd be happy to jump on board with that. He is, you know, I think in the upper tier of two-way players and really in the upper tier of offensive players, period, in the NBA. And, you know, I think when you're – again, I talk with my NBA buddies, you know, whether they're front office guys or other old teammates, former players, you know, all my guys. We talk about sort of team building all the time. We always put our GM hats on. And I do think, you know, when you're just kind of throwing pieces together in the middle of a season – you know, there's growing pains. I mean, specifically on the basketball side of things.
Yeah.
And, you know, the personnel and the pieces have to fit. And so I think if there were any growing pains, you know, that was essentially what it boiled down to. You know, the narrative about Jimmy being a bad guy, I just don't buy it. It's not true.
Will Simmons ever be able to shoot a mid-range jumper? You're an expert on jump shots.
Ben works. He worked all of last offseason. I witnessed him during the season get his shots up after practice.
He
every
supposedly
day.
Shoots threes in practice okay.
I don't know that he ever took like threes like in a five-on-five setting.
No. Like just practice.
Oh, yeah,
practice
yeah. Shoes. Like shooting the ball. Yeah. For sure. So I think he'll be able to shoot at some point. And a lot of it, I think, is just you look. It's confidence. I mean, he can shoot at a high enough clip when he's shooting spot shots that it should translate at some point to shooting threes in a game. The video that went viral. I mean, he's shooting those. You saw those
of
videos,
of course.
Yeah. I mean, he looks to me like he's shooting with some confidence.
How am I supposed
to
react to those? Just those in general.
I'm such a curmudgeon when it comes to these videos in the off season. I don't buy them. I watch them and I'm like, this is just awful basketball a lot of
times. You should do one of you just running around screens, like not even showing the shot, just like really good form. Here's J.J. Redick running around screens. Great form. Looks ready. By the way, running around screens. So every year I write this column. Called my six most intriguing players for the upcoming season. Okay. I don't pick rookies. I don't pick stars. I'm going to pick Luke Kennard this year.
Oh, there you go.
Because if he's good, that matters to Detroit. And if he's bad, that matters to Detroit. Another Duke guy. And I'm watching film of Detroit's offense, and it's like you're watching what he's doing, what he does, right? So he spots up. He runs an occasional side pick and roll as a second side guy, blah, blah, blah. And then you're like, what is he not doing? And he doesn't have the Redick, Korver, Wayne Ellington, the dying breed of guys who run around, who are roving gravity guys. Are there guys in the league who have asked you, like, how do I get good at that? Are there recent examples? I'm sure there are guys, but are there recent examples of like, hey, that seems like a really good thing to be able to do. It's extremely hard, like to catch and go that fast. But it seems like if you could train a guy like that to be able to do it, like, so let's say Luke Kennard just tops out as an okay pick and roll player, right? Yeah. If he doesn't get that kind of skill like you have, I don't know what he is in the NBA, but it would seem like a good thing to teach somebody.
Okay, so the first part, guys ask me that in game all the time. Hey, can I train with you this summer? Hey, I want to train with you this summer. I'll have, you know, I had a couple guys reach out to me through former coaches, you know, that still play, obviously, and they said, I want to come train with you. I have had guys reach out through my agent. Hey, I want to come train with you. I'm at the same place every day at 9 a.m., 1133 6th Avenue. I'm there every day and have yet to have someone come join me.
I like that you go at 9 a.m. When I read stories of players, like I wake up at 5:15, I have a protein shake, I'm at the gym by 6, I'm like, I guess that's good. Like, why? Yeah. Like, you don't have to live like the Mark Wahlberg daily schedule of like, I woke up at 3 and I just wake up at a normal time.
Yeah, I agree with that, but you know, to each his own. I had one guy who he reached out. He said, hey, I'm going to come to New York. I said, here's the weeks that would work. Come for 3 or 4 days. We'll get it done. He said, okay, it would be one of these two dates, and I never heard from him again. You know, so that's, I had another guy who was in town, and I was like, 9 a.m., see you tomorrow. He just stood me up, you know. So, like, I don't know. I think the one part of it, though, is, like, it requires a lot. It's not an easy, like, it's not an easy thing to just move that much.
No, you've never played that way,
it's not.
You're playing a different game than everyone else on the floor in some ways.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's an incredibly powerful weapon, but it's not like, let me develop my left-handed dribble or something. It's a whole different way of playing.
Yeah. And I'm not just sprinting off screens at 9 a.m., for an hour. That's not what I'm working on necessarily, but There's a skill development that I work on every summer, and you know, people may not notice, but you know, I've gotten better in a lot of different ways. But I also know sort of what makes me unique, and that's something that you know I'm constantly working on. And being able to, number one, be in really good shape. And number two, which I think, again, this is something that I don't know that you can teach. Like, you have to have the motor to do it. You have to have the energy to go out there every night and play that way. And it's a lot.
This is a very dumb question, but one I'm going to ask the Pistons and ask Kennard when I interview him. How do you make your release faster? Like, how do you train yourself to get rid of the ball faster? Is it, I have my knees bent and ready to go by the time it's the ball hits my hand? Like, how do you make a quick release quicker?
I think there's a couple ways to do it. Number one is working on eliminating the bring down, sort of the catch. Let's say you catch it, let's say eye level to waist level, somewhere in that area. Almost everybody, and I do it too, like you catch it and to get into your jump shot, you bring the ball down and use that sort of as momentum to then lift back up.
Anthony Morrow was the first guy.
The man. But he took it to an extreme.
He would catch a pass above his head and just keep it there.
But he also shot a set shot.
Clay does it sometimes.
Clay's great. And Clay, I mean, his form, I've talked about this a ton, but his form is the best I've ever seen. He has no wasted motion at all. But he also, again, it's – unless he's shooting off the dribble, it's not really a jump shot. You know, right. He's just it's different. So I think that's one. You have to eliminate that bring down. And you can work at that, right? You can just work on catching the ball and still getting some elevation and shooting. Another one is like you shoot on the way up. Steph is the man at this. Steph shoots on the way up. Not a lot of guys do that. I do that sometimes as well. I mean, you inevitably sort of have to do that. And then you just can kind of work on just getting it out of your hands quicker. And there's ways to do that. But like those are sort of the three things you can do. But it's hard. I think I've changed the way that I shoot. You know, it's evolved. I don't shoot the same way in high school, the college, the NBA, or even early in my NBA career. I shoot differently now. And it's subtle, but it's different. And you look back at – if you look back at a high school video of me or a college video of me, I shoot it differently.
This will be your – you played two seasons in Philly, right? So this will be your third season away from the Clippers.
Yes.
Everyone's gone now, and they're a completely remade team. Mm-hmm. Have you guys – maybe it's a dinner. Maybe it's a text chain. Maybe it's talking to Doc before a game. Have you guys now, with the benefit of time, been able to sort of reflect on a deeper way of like – well, okay, that's what that experience means to me, or that's how close we got, or that's or I think about it differently now, or like, oh, can you believe we lived through all of the Sterling? So whatever it is, has there been a dinner, a moment, a conversation, or maybe just independent thinking about it where you've been able to reflect more deeply on that time?
For sure. I've thought about it a ton. I've thought about a lot what I would have done differently, both individually and sort of to help the team. I had a conversation with Doc when we played them last year. I think it was on New Year's Day. We were winning at the end of the game, and I went over to him and said, "Hey, man, let's chat after the game." And sort of cleared the air on some things. And I had CP on the podcast, I think, in March.
He's a multiple time guest on your podcast.
Yeah, and he and I chatted for like literally an hour and a half, not on the record, like just on the side and. DJ and I've had this talk a ton too. Jamal and I've talked, like, we've all, and I know Matt said this a bunch too, publicly, but like, we've all just been like, man, we really f***ed that up. Like, we had a chance to win, and it was such a special time. And then by at least my sort of end of my third year, fourth year, it just felt completely different. And there was these small little cracks and small little fractures. And we didn't do the right thing, and we didn't repair them the way we should have, and address them the way we should have. Look back, and I'm like, how did that team not win one championship?
So the 90 minutes with Chris, obviously you can't get into the most private stuff or whatever. But like, what's the general? Are you rehashing like moments in a game? Are you what's the what are some of the takeaways?
I think the takeaways are you don't always realize how good you have it when you're in it, and that's just human nature. You know, there's the cliched, the grass isn't always greener on the other side, and it's absolutely true. And you know, I think the other part of that is just we meaning everybody, we did not do a great job of not being annoyed by each other.
Well, there's one name you didn't mention in your – I talked to all these people, list of people. You got to DJ, you got to Matt, you got to CP, you got to Doc. There's one big name you didn't mention. I don't know if that's just an accident.
Oh, no. I mean, look, I have no ill will whatsoever towards Blake. I just haven't had a chance to talk to him.
He played very well. I sure was a shame that he finished the season injured and had to miss a couple of the games against Milwaukee. He had a hell of a year. I think, did he make all NBA? I know I voted him all NBA. I think he did make it.
I can't remember. He was awesome last year. He was awesome.
The grass is not always greener. Well, okay. I mean, only one guy forced his way somewhere else. Now he's now playing for the Oklahoma City Thunder, which is just bizarre on lots of levels.
It feels weird. That feels weird.
It feels very weird.
Yeah.
I mean, they actually have a decent starting five. I don't like their bench all that much. But did you listen to Ramona's Donald Sterling thing?
I haven't had a chance to yet.
I expected you to be in it. Why aren't you in it?
Well, so I had been asked to do this through CAA about 3 or 4 months out. I think it was released. I think they wanted to finish up by the end of May. It got released recently in the last month, I guess. And so I knew it was happening, and I love Ramona, and I've done, you know, a bunch of stuff, you know, for her and with her. And at the time, I said, I don't want to talk about the Sterling thing. And then when we were in the playoffs, as we're approaching this 5-year anniversary, there were a couple people that wanted to write articles that had asked me to give some quotes on it. I know Mark Spears did one. I just was like, this is not something I want to be talking about in the middle of the season. And then, you know, I got a request this summer. I guess I'm not going to say who it is, but there's a documentary coming out about it. And it's, you know, sort of first person account of the people that were there. And, because of who was producing the documentary, I was like, all right, I'll do it. So I did that about a month ago. And that's really the first time.
If I were more in the know, I would know who that is, but I can only guess who it is.
But I mean, it was the first time that I'd really, you know, talked about that, you know, in front of a camera. It was, it was a lot. It was a lot to process.
Blake is the only, what I would say, sort of the premier four guys. He's the only one who talks in the podcast.
In the Ramona one.
Yeah, in the Ramona one. And I, you know, he's very thoughtful in it. I found myself craving, like, I wonder what Chris thinks. I wonder what JJ thinks. I wonder what they remember. So I guess one day we will find out, what you remember. In Philly, you know, Brett tried a lot of, interesting cultural stuff. Like, everyone had to give a presentation at some point about something important to them. You did, what did you do? You did,
it didn't necessarily have to be something important.
Or just something interesting. Yeah. Something interesting. Yeah, something that you thought people
would
like to hear.
It was called Team Breakfast. And every player would give a presentation, a PowerPoint presentation, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, some were shorter, some were longer, on just a topic. And I chose, simulation theory.
That's right.
Whether or not we are, in fact living in a simulation, and sort of the, arguments and the philosophical, you know, questions surrounding that.
Covington did snakes.
Yeah. Amir did tattoos. TJ did coffee.
Saric, I believe, did the history of the Yugoslavian War, right?
Correct. I was not there for that. That was before I got there.
So are you trying to transplant any of these things in New Orleans? this is a serious question, though. You've been on a lot of good teams. Are there things that you think are like, hey, I picked that up from that team, or I picked that up from that coach and I thought it was really good. Like, can we try that here?
Yeah, I think I go into every locker room, with just sort of a blank page and an open mind. I don't want to be a disruptor right away. I think it's important to sort of respect Drew. It's important to respect Alvin. It's important to respect what David and Trajan are trying to build. And so I think the challenge always, and it was the same way when I was sort of coming into Philadelphia my first year, that the challenge really is to sort of ease your way in and figure out, you know, where can I really help in terms of leadership and mentoring and team building. The one thing I'll say is I wish, and I've tried, you know, I wish that, the team meal on the road, like, I think is huge. I think that's huge. And I wish we didn't do it enough last year in Philly. We tried and we did a few, but it wasn't enough. And, you know, some of that, like, look, nobody wants to be forced to go to dinner. And so it's got to be, you know, real and authentic. And I know when I was in LA with the Clippers, like, you know, we would just go out to dinner, and sometimes it'd be four guys, sometimes it'd be 12 guys, but there was no, like, expectation or like Jamal Crawford never left his hotel room. And then randomly he would show up to a team dinner and be like, oh, this is a special night because Jamal's here, you know? But there wasn't, like, guilt about it. Like, Jamal, you need to come more. So I think that's something that I'm hoping we do more of this year.
Have there been things that, without naming them, that coaches and teams have tried and just were such flops? They're like, we can't ever do this again.
I can't even think anything off the
sometimes,
top of my head.
Sometimes you go to these team building.
But no, but like there are times that I can't think of anything specifically, but there's been times where like a coach will be like, this is what we're going to do. And then it'll happen once and then it won't happen again. Or like the guy who's like the, you know, quote unquote leader of the team, we're like, this is what we're going to do. And then, you know, it just, the response is tepid and nobody does it again. That happens.
I just more think of like sometimes
the breakfast thing, like that's an enduring
thing.
That's
cool.
And it's taken on a whole thing now. And people really look forward, like with the 76ers, like people in the organization, like people from the business side come over and they listen to it. I mean,
did Embiid ever do one?
I don't think Joel has done one. Ben did one on Australian wildlife, like
that's
all
right.
the venomous creatures in Australia, the deadly creatures.
There's a lot of, some of them are not found anywhere else in the world. People, do you ever feel like ticketing websites make getting to the event difficult on purpose? It's as if they're so big and so unwieldy they can get away with not caring about the customer experience. But with millions of live ticket events and price match guarantees, SeatGeek has proven there is a better way. You can search for sports tickets, music tickets, comedy tickets. The NBA season is right around the corner. Go to your favorite NBA arena. SeatGeek has the tickets you're looking for all in one place. No more going to 17 secondary market sites. It's all on SeatGeek. They built the fastest way to find tickets. It has an easy-to-use rating system, color-coded. Green dots mean good deals. Red dots mean the deal might be overpriced. It rates every deal from 1 to 10. That's pretty easy to use. It has an interactive seat map. Every purchase is fully guaranteed so you can shop for tickets with confidence. I've used SeatGeek many times to buy tickets, including to Broadway plays and stuff. It's fast. It's easy. It saves you time. And SeatGeek right now will even give you $10 off your first purchase. All you need to do is use our promo code. So download the SeatGeek app today. Use promo code LOWE, L-O-W-E, my last name, the name of this podcast. Bam. $10 off your first purchase. That could be a decent percentage of a sporting event, a baseball game, a basketball game. That's promo code LOW for $10 off your first purchase with SeatGeek. Okay, you claim, or I shouldn't say you claim, there have been articles written about you in which you cite the importance of the 1992 Duke-Kentucky game in determining your desire to attend Duke. This is the Christian Laettner buzzer-beater game.
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay.
Is that fair or not? There was an article I read.
That's been cited.
You saw that game and you're like, I'm going to Duke. I don't have a second choice. It's Duke. That's it.
Yeah, that's the story I've been told.
You were like seven or something. I wasn't at the game. I was 14. I have maintained it was the single greatest game I've ever seen in my life. Period.
Yeah.
Haven't seen a better game. Now
I've rewatched it a few times, like periodically throughout my life.
So
like, college. You know, early pro, I've saw it maybe 3 or 4 years ago. I would agree with that.
Okay, so then you should be able to get these answers very easily.
Oh, my God.
Who made the shot to put Kentucky up one with X amount of seconds left before Leitner's shot? Even I remember this.
Woods?
Sean Woods.
Yeah.
Correct. Okay. Bank shot over Leitner.
It was the bank shot. Yeah.
How many seconds were left in that game?
2.1.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Sports Illustrated inaccurately has it cited as 2.2 in one. What was the final score?
104-103.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's very good. Where was the game?
The Spectrum.
Wow.
Come on.
I thought that one would get you.
Yeah.
You've rewatched it. In my head, the last 5 minutes is just basket. Like incredible basketball.
Yeah.
Like tough shot, like really great shot making.
Yeah. I can't remember the specifics of all the back and forth, but I'm trying.
Someone on Kentucky had a mustache. It was really exciting.
Pelfrey?
Pelfrey did not have a mustache.
Pelfrey didn't have a mustache. That squad was amazing.
That was – Mashburn was like either a freshman. I think that might have been his freshman year, and he was a badass freshman. In my head, it was just – almost like the Patriots-Eagles Super Bowl, where it's like whoever has the ball last is going to win the game because these teams are just incredible. It's the greatest game I've ever seen in my life. I'm impressed that you remember. I didn't remember it being in the Spectrum. For some reason, I didn't remember. I didn't know where it was. Spectrum is now gone. Obviously.
If I didn't get those questions right.
Woods was a struggle. Sean Woods was a struggle.
In my mind, I was like Woods, but then I was like trying to remember his first name, and I couldn't.
You are officially listed with one NBA dunk.
Oh, man. That's not where I thought you were going. Okay.
Do you remember when and where it was?
Of course.
I mean, I hope
you
so.
You act like I haven't YouTubed this dunk like 20 times
Look,
in my life.
Look, if you put in J.J. Redick dunk, there are only a few different – here are the three things that come up. This dunk,
yeah.
Which I'm – can you say – you remember what it was?
Yeah, it was game six of the 2011 first round versus the Hawks in Atlanta.
Yes.
Gilbert Arenas missed like an 18-footer. Dwight got the offensive rebound at the elbow. I cut from the right corner. He passed it to me, and I dunked.
So at what point when you catch that ball are you like, I think I'm dunking. I'm going for it.
Because I didn't dribble.
No, it was you
yeah,
caught
I just
it
caught
and
it and just
went
dunk. I think – so I had been feeling particularly bouncy in warm-ups that game. And earlier in the second half, I had come around like a little – it was like half DHO, half catch and shoot. It was like a weird little play. But I'd come off on the left side and driven down the middle past Jamal and laid it in. And remember thinking to myself, like, oh, I should have dunked that. And then it would be just was like stuck in my head that I'm going to dunk the next chance I get.
It was not like a barely dunk. You got two hands, good. Bam, in. It's two not hands. Like when Steph goes up to dunk. First of all, the right. last three times Steph has tried to dunk.
He's got
to
stop.
It's gone badly
He's
for him.
Stop.
Here are the three things that come up when you YouTube J.J. Redick dunk. That,
okay,
which you accurately described. I would almost call it an emphatic dunk. An emphatic two-handed. Did you get for it in the locker room afterwards or even on the bench right
now? We lost at the buzzer.
Yeah, your season was over. So no.
I just remember Gilbert when we got back to the bench. Yeah, Gilbert was going nuts. He thought it was the funniest thing because he and I had been talking about me dunking for forever. And I finally got one. So I was proud
of
myself.
That's the only one.
In the NBA, it's the only one in the NBA.
The other one that comes up is Duke Maryland breakaway where it's like if you don't dunk it.
It's popping back to half court. I was always concerned. I was always concerned that the floor was slick at Cameron. So I remember catching that ball and be like, all right, I'm going to dunk, but I don't really want to like really take off. I'm going to give myself some sort of room here in case I slip.
Okay.
Where I can still lay it in, that it won't like completely like make me fall on my back. And I barely gave myself enough room because I squeaked it over. I did have a second dunk my senior year, but it's not a standalone highlight.
Oh.
Yeah. It was at Boston College.
Okay.
It was a very similar dunk. It was a fast break. Paulus got a steal, threw it ahead to me. I caught it, took a dribble and dunked it. By the way, I just want to say this since you brought it up.
Yeah.
I'm going to gas myself up a little bit.
Okay.
The other day, I don't really, you know, I'm not like, I'm in the gym. I'm not really working on my dunking. But the other day, I was like, all right, I feel pretty bouncy right now. And I went up and I dunked it two hands. And I, like, it was always been a goal of mine to be able to dunk at 35, and I can still dunk. So I feel pretty good about
Who
that.
Who was it? I think it was last year, D. Brown. We were talking before a game, and he was about to turn 50. And he said, I might be telling this story. I'm going to look up if he's 50. He was approaching a milestone birthday.
Okay.
And he said, it's always been my goal to be able to dunk at 50. And he did it. He pulled it off. Vince is going to be able to dunk when he's 65. Oh, Vince is going to be.
Vince's limbs are just so long. That's the problem. Like, I have a negative wingspan, man.
Well, I was going to say, do you know what I learned in researching fellow Duke guard Luke Kennard?
Negative wingspan?
Negative wingspan. So I think you might be the only two guys in the NBA.
Sucks, man.
It doesn't seem like a good thing to – well, it's not a good thing for basketball where you have to reach up towards a sphere.
I always wonder if I was like 6'5 and a half with like a 6'8 wingspan. Like, well, first of all, would I be able to shoot as well? I don't know. But let's assume shooting doesn't change. Like, would my career be a little different? I don't know. Your margin for error would have gone up.
You'd be a totally different – I mean you might have a different, totally different style of play. Like you just might be – the third result on YouTube of J.J. Redick dunk is a blurry handheld video of Orlando Magic layup line of some guy who's like really terrible at filming with his phone. Like it's just shaking all over the place. It's like if a toddler had taped the warm-up line.
It was the very first iPhone probably, 2008.
And you dunk – and I don't think this guy had any intention of like saving this video and posting it to YouTube, except you happened to dunk and it's like, oh, you hear about, oh, J.J. Redick dunked. And then now it's on YouTube.
Rashard Lewis used to get me hyped when I played. This was back, you know, I'm 22 to 26 when we were teammates. And I mean, I used to be bouncy. I used to windmill and 360 and warm-ups, and, you know, I can't do all that anymore.
360 dunk?
I could 360 windmill.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I thought you were going to say about that dunk against Maryland when you said you didn't want to hurt yourself. I thought you were going to say I had so much time. I thought like
about 360.
Should I cock it back? Should I try something?
I've always felt like I expend so much energy in other areas of the game, specifically running off screens, that I'm like, let's just take the 2 points. You know, they're the easiest shot I get.
Were you ever at a Donald Sterling White party?
No, but Blake has told me
about
his experience at a Donald Sterling White party. I think I had one interaction with Donald Sterling. It was in preseason at our charity golf tournament, and I went over to his table, and he had his V Stiviano, thank you. She was there, and some other person was there, and I just went over and I said hello. And, you know, he had tried – the story, of course, is out there, but he had tried to take my contract back.
Yes.
In the summer, like, you know, basically back out of the sign and trade with Milwaukee. So
for astute basketball reasons, most likely,
yeah.
It's Donald Sterling.
Well, it was because he didn't want to pay a white player. But anyways, so I just went over and I said hello. And he said, hey, I've heard a lot of great things about you. And I said, thank you. And I walked away. And that was the only time I ever spoke to him.
Probably for – well, not probably. For the better. When is the last time you talked with Adam Morrison?
Oh, probably when I had him on my podcast.
Oh, that's right.
That was like 3 years ago. But actually, we talked. I want to say within that year we talked a couple more times on text message. But yeah, that was probably it. That's probably it.
I don't know what he's doing right now.
I don't either.
Couple quick hitters, and then you get out of here. Have you ever played Team USA?
The senior team?
Yeah,
no.
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 This year you could have maybe made it. I mean, they're for sure. Do you, is it something that you cared about at one point playing? Or
when I was like,
to have done it?
When I was like 22, I like made a weird bucket list, and it was all over the place. It was like five or six things, some of which I couldn't even control. So it was like, it was weird, but one of the things was to play on the national team and in the Olympics or in the world championships. So when I got the call this summer, I wanted to do it. I told Sean Ford and I told Pop that I wanted to do it. I chatted with them, you know, hey, what are my realistic chances of making the team? Blah blah blah, and it was an impossible summer for me to give 6 weeks. If I had re-signed with Philly, I would have said yes on the spot. It would have been no thinking about it. We had a lot of moving parts in our life this summer. Specifically my family, and obviously trying to figure out our life down in New Orleans. And, you know, it wasn't the right time. And that sucks because I said this to Pop and Sean, but like, you know, I realize where I stand on the pecking order, and this was a very unique opportunity for me to have a chance to do this. And it was probably my only shot. Well, you know, it is my only shot. You know, all those guys are going to play in the Olympics.
You think so?
And then I'll be too old.
I assume everyone will play in the Olympics.
So yeah, so this was the one shot. So it sucked. In 16, I was on my anniversary trip at the end of June with my wife. She was pregnant with our second kid,
yeah.
Kai, and he was due August 24th, I want to say.
My birthday.
And the gold medal game was like something like the 22nd, and Coach K called me and was like, hey, going into a meeting right now. There's a chance, like basically we have one roster spot where we're debating about which direction we want to go, but I'm going to bring your name up. You know, you have some support internally from Jerry and some other guys. So there's a chance, you know, we may ask you to do it. If I put it out there that you want to do it, or, you know, would you do it? And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. Like, I would just potentially miss the birth of my son. But
you better win the gold in that scenario.
And then I think, I don't want to say it was Harrison Barnes, but like, I think it was like Harrison, another guy, ended up getting those last couple spots or whatever.
Well, look, we can't go into an international tournament without at least one Plumlee. You just apparently you can't do it. There has to be a plumb league. It doesn't matter if we have five centers and we want to play one, or three centers and we want to play zero.
He's played twice, right? Did he play in Olympics or World?
I assume
twice?
The only locks for the 2020 Olympic team are LeBron and Mason Plumlee. I assume 10 other roster spots are up for grabs. Those two are taken.
Good for him, man. Good for him. He's had a good career too.
The real hero of the World Championships was Luis Scola. So, Luis Scola can't get on an NBA team?
I didn't even know he was still playing basketball. Dude, that's not a knock on Luis Scola.
He
played in China.
And Luis is
39.
He's a fascinating dude. He played in China in part because he wants to keep playing, but also he's like, he has, I think, four kids. He got a lot of kids. And he's like, I kind of want them to grow up all over the world. Like, if they have 2 years in China, I think that's cool for them. I remember talking to him about this. I can't believe that. I get that the 82 games, it's not FIBA. I get it. So we saw what happened to Teodosic when he came here. And people warned me he's not going to last. It's going to be too many games. So maybe that's all it is. But congrats to Spain and Argentina. Last thing, you preempted my last question. The playoff streak. Are you worried? Do you care?
Like 2-3 years ago, I didn't care, but now I care.
All right.
It's become a thing.
This is going to be tough.
It's going to become a thing.
This is a tough one. You're in the wrong conference.
I know. It's going
to would have been very easy for you to sign with any number of Eastern Conference teams.
Yeah. No, my expectation is that we're going to challenge for a playoff spot. I don't make any guarantees in life, of course, but, you know, I would expect us to be right there.
So here's my assessment of the West. Are you ready?
Yeah. I would actually like to hear this.
Okay. So, I'm just going to list teams. Okay, so Denver, Houston, Utah, that's three. The both LA teams, that's five. Portland, six. This is not in order. I'm just listing teams that I think people would consider playoff teams. Portland, six. Warriors, seven. Spurs, eight. So let's just stop there for a second. I've had a lot of discussions with people, are the Warriors a lock or not? The consensus around the league is that they're a lock. The two guys are just too good. D'Angelo fit well. So that's fine. So that if they're a lock, then we're running out of spots. I said San Antonio. I'm high on San Antonio, higher than most, although I'm starting to get a little worried about like a pop Team USA hangover effect, like a fatigue effect.
Okay.
I'm higher than most on Dallas. I think Dallas has a chance to make the playoffs. Obviously, there's a big wild card of like, is the big fella healthy and ready to go? We're already up to nine. We have not gotten to you guys, which I would put right below Dallas maybe in my rankings. And the Kings, that's 11. The Kings won 38, 37 last year, outperformed their point differential a little bit. Don't love their team, but I don't necessarily buy that they're ready for a leap. But I'll tell you this, they're a lot like you guys in that they have 12 legitimate good NBA players.
Yeah.
And there's a power in not playing any bad NBA players. Not that any of it. Players, right? So we're up to 11 teams. It's everyone but Phoenix.
You said earlier OKC has
OKC
has like a good starting five. But we don't know their intention.
They can very easily bail themselves out of the race. And Minnesota, some people are like, maybe Minnesota's frisky. They won 36 games. They were pretty good when Covington played. Like, I think they're all right. I'm buying Minnesota as 12th in the West. So like, if you guys make it or if Dallas makes it, Someone that people would consider unthinkable to miss the playoffs is missing the playoffs. It's a bloodbath out there.
It is. I'm glad that we get to play games and we don't get to just pick things based on paper.
What makes me nervous about you guys?
Let's hear it.
So I was super high on Milwaukee last year for the very simple reason of like, I like when you just look at it and you're like, all right, that's easy. That makes sense. Yeah. Giannis plus shooting, let's go. Yeah. Like, easy. I look at you guys and I'm like, there's a lot of stuff going on here. A lot of dudes who can't shoot, a lot of dudes who are really good shooters, but I don't know how many of them they can get on the floor together. Zion's a rookie. There's talk about playing Zion at the five, but you're going to start him. Like, if you start Favors, Zion, Ingram, Lonzo, that's not a lot of shooting. They don't, like, there's just a lot. Like, you're going to play super fast, right? Yeah. Like, that's interesting. That'll catch the league off guard a little bit. But I get nervous, and this is a thing now in the league where all the contracts are so short. I get nervous when I look at a team like, man, they got a lot of stuff to figure out. Like, they got a lot of, like, they got a lot of stuff to just, like, so that makes me.
There were times in the first few months of my first year in Philly, you know, we were 14-18, I think, going into the Christmas Day game against the Knicks. And there's a few times that where I'm like, man, this could go really south. Like, you know,
we're 14 and 18.
There's some fragility here.
I don't remember the season.
And being like, hey, I'm the old head on the team. What happens in February if we're out of the play? Like, I'm having these thoughts with, you know, myself, with a couple of teammates, my agent. I'm like, and I kept telling Brett though, I'm like, Brett, I'm not just saying this, but I actually think we're really good. I don't think I'm crazy. I think we're actually really good. And then we end up, you know, 52 and 30 in third place. And so something sort of clicked. So I would say this, that from my understanding, like the way David Griffin and Trajan and Alvin are looking at this season, like there's going to be some allowance for some growing pains, and we're going to hopefully be there right at the end where we're contending for 7 or 8.
Have you met the Melly kid?
Yeah, I met him the other day. Yeah.
People are high on that kid. I don't know if he's a kid.
I haven't seen him play yet, but yeah.
Like maybe backup center, stretch five kind of deal. Yeah. Let Zion roam.
I know the ideal sort of pairing, I think, is a stretch five with Zion, but there's only so many of those guys.
Yeah, you get Zion rumbling in space.
Yeah.
It's going to be all over.
Yeah.
All right, you got to go do some training with no other NBA players apparently are going to train with you. You know what I have to go do? I have to go get my wedding ring resized.
Why is that?
I bought it right down here.
Okay.
So it's always been like a teensy bit big. So let me ask you something. When you lose weight, can your fingers get a little smaller? Because I've lost like 20 pounds, and I think
you look good, man. I got to say, you look good.
So here's what happened. So it's always been like when I go swimming,
oh yeah,
and your fingers get cold. So I was in Croatia this summer, and like we're swimming around on the beach, and like we're throwing the ball around, and I'm throwing the kids around, and all of a sudden I pop up, and I look at my finger. Oh, my wedding ring is gone, and my wife is like, how long have I been telling you? How long have I been telling you? I'm like, I know. Then I had an ultimate, like, as the words are coming out of my mouth, I immediately realize I've said the very worst possible thing I could say. I said, look, it's only a ring. We can replace it. And like, it's only a ring. Like what I meant to say is like, let's not react like this is a health crisis, but didn't come out right. Then an hour long, like scuba diving scavenger hunt with me and my brother-in-law's brother-in-law.
But you found it in the water?
We are on a little beach where once you walk out like 20 feet, then you're in about 15 to 20 foot deep water. And after about an hour, I gave up. I said, like, I'm heartbroken. This is going to ruin the rest of my vacation. I'm an idiot. And I'm walking off the beach sullen. And I hear my brother-in-law's brother-in-law, who's Italian, speaks almost no English, just say, Zach, and he's holding it up, and he found it somewhere. So that this is what I'm now going to go do.
Is that how long have you been married?
7 years.
7 years, and that's the same ring that you put on at the altar on your wedding day.
Yes.
Is that true? You hesitated there.
No. I'm embarrassed because it's always been a tiny bit, but it became a crisis.
But now it's an issue because you've lost all this weight. I've worn the same ring. I've had the same ring since my wedding day. So a little over 9 years, and I've lost it, I would say, 24 times. Left it in locker rooms.
See, yeah, you're in a, yeah.
I've left it at gyms, and the thing just keeps coming back to me. I don't know how, I never.
What's the longest you've been apart from it?
Oh, like 5 or 6 days.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like where you're on a road trip and you leave it in the locker room in Indiana after the game, and you don't really realize it till the next day, and then. You know, by that time, but it keeps coming back.
My wife said, you know, as long as you're going, my ring needs cleaning. And I said, there's no chance I'm taking that thing.
I thought you were going to tell me your wife said, my ring needs replacing.
No, she said cleaning. I said, I am not being responsible for taking that thing around New York City because I'll lose it and then it'll really. So I got to go. JJ Redick, congratulations on your new deal with the New Orleans Pelicans. Maybe the most interesting top to bottom team in the league, I guess, from an NBA nerd standpoint. I mean, everyone's going to be interested in the Lakers and the Clippers and all this, but you guys are super interesting. And like I said, write a book. When you're done, write a book.
All right. I will.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.